Hey guys, and welcome back to episode 2 of Underrated, a podcast where we look at films we believe are underrated, generally disliked, or simply forgotten. I'm your host, Gabriel Green, and with me is my co-host, James Hamrick. How you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good. It's 6 in the morning here, so I am in the suitable mindset to talk about insomnia.
Yeah, I was about to say that too. It's about 4 here, so it's definitely fitting, but it wasn't planned that way, believe it or not.
Some technical issues with internet connection kind of forced us in the situation, but it's all cool. I'm ready to talk about it.
So is anything cool going on in your life?
Other than not being in summer classes anymore, not really too much.
Okay.
What about you?
Not really at all. Work like normal, and the podcast is new, but otherwise it's pretty much the same as every other week. Have you watched any cool movies lately?
I haven't seen anything recently other than Suicide Squad, but I know that we've got some differing opinions there, so we may save comments for another episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen actually quite a few things recently. First would be Suicide Squad, which I loathe a lot. And so you like it, so we're going to review that. I am looking forward to that. It should be fun, but I'm not looking forward to seeing it again.
It's better the second time, I guarantee you. That's what everybody said too.
Well, yeah, that's normally the case for a bad film. You can kind of overlook some of the flaws, but my problems with it were so fundamental to the art of filmmaking that I don't know. Maybe I'll notice them even more. And I've also been watching The Office, which I think I'm probably the last human being on Earth to have not seen that. But yeah, I made it this far without seeing it somehow, and I'm really liking it.
British or U.S.?
This is U.S., yeah.
Okay.
I kind of want to check out the British one, too, because I'm a big fan of Martin Freeman. But yeah, this is the U.S. version, and it's really fun, but you've probably already seen it, so.
Oh, it's one of my favorite comedies ever. It's pretty much my go-to show if I'm ever bored sitting around. I can't really go wrong with putting an episode of that on.
And I also saw Pete's Dragon, which I really liked. I thought it was pretty adorable. It feels like a film that would have been made back in the 80s. Just a very simple film for the whole family. It's not just for kids, even though I think it is targeted towards children. It's also not insulting to adults, which is what a lot of modern children's films are, unfortunately. It had great characters and a lot of heart, and it's just a lot of fun. Yeah, so go check it out if you get a chance.
Yeah, I wanted to. I think Disney's kind of been, I think maybe with the exception of Tarzan, it seems like they've been stepping up their game with their live action movies.
Yeah.
Like Cinderella, I haven't seen really any of them, but I really want to. I heard Cinderella was really good. I heard that Jungle Book was really, really good. And then I've heard good things about this, so I definitely want to start watching. Beauty and the Beast looks pretty good, too.
Yeah. Tarzan, I believe, was Warner Brothers, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thankfully. yeah, I adored Cinderella. It was one of my top 10 that year. Jungle Book was also quite good. I'm going to pretend Maleficent never happened, but
with everyone else.
I'm really happy with how they're handling these remakes, and they can keep doing it forever as far as I care. And now we'll move into our main review of Christopher Nolan's Insomnia.
They brought him in to solve an unspeakable crime.
Detective Dormer, it's such an honor to meet you. I'm Detective Ellie Burr. Welcome to Nightmute.
So incredible to be working with you. The Leland Street murders was my case study at the Academy.
Someone out there just beat a 17-year-old girl to death. Your job is to find him.
Doesn't say in the report that he clipped her nails. He washed her hair.
No mutilation?
Not this time.
He tortures him, makes him do things, and keeps him there for 3 days.
This guy, he crossed the line, and he didn't even blink.
Police!
What Detective Dormer doesn't know is that murder
is only part of the plan.
Don't me.
Killing changes you. It's like awareness.
Who am I speaking to?
Can't sleep well?
He will taunt you.
You and I share a secret. We know how easy it is to kill somebody.
He will torment you.
Can't be easy after 3 days of no sleep. Are you seeing things yet?
And those little tricks of light.
He will get inside your head.
There's a ferry about 5 miles out to Nightmute. I'll be on at 11 o'clock.
I have great respect for your profession. The situation isn't yours to control, Will.
You're trying to impress me, Finch. You had the wrong guy.
It took you 10 minutes to beat Kit Connell to death.
No evidence that I killed Kay. You only know it because I told you.
Are you doing okay? I mean, you haven't been sleeping much, Detective Dormer.
Another night up like this and you're really gonna lose it.
Now the game has turned deadlier than he ever imagined.
This whole thing you're doing ain't gonna work with me.
Hold it!
Where is she, Finch?
Don't worry, Will. You can sleep when you're dead.
Insomnia was a film released in 2002, directed by Christopher Nolan, and starring Al Pacino, Robin Williams, and Hilary Swank. It had a pretty small budget of $46 million compared to blockbusters, and it ended up making $113 million. So it definitely wasn't a financial failure, but it wasn't like this huge hit either.
Yeah, I doubt they put too much into marketing for it, so they probably made their money back plus a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it helped kind of put a little bit more faith in Christopher Nolan. Because I think the movie he did after this was Batman Begins.
Yeah, I believe so.
And so, you know, at this point, he had two pretty solid films under his belt. So I'm definitely glad this movie happened.
Yeah, and it got pretty strong critical reviews when it was released. I believe it got like 80-something on Rotten Tomatoes.
I actually think it sits at a 92.
Okay. Maybe we should have that up, but I forgot. So this is your choice this week. So why did you choose this one?
So whenever we were doing the podcast, I know the original idea, at least that I had in my mind, was just to talk about movies that, you know, were critically bashed or that a lot of people didn't like. But then I realized, you know, we could also talk about movies that, you know, maybe didn't get really bad reviews, but for whatever reason are kind of overlooked. And I think there's a bunch of different reasons that a movie can be underrated. I think with this particular one, because Christopher Nolan has such an impressive filmography, and because this was so early on in his career, it just seemed like this is one that always gets overlooked. Like, anytime people bring up Christopher Nolan's earlier movies, it's always, you know, pretty much always go to Memento.
Yeah.
I mean, that movie's amazing as well. And then they'll sometimes they'll even bring up, you know, Prestige, which came out right after Batman Begins. But it just seems like Insomnia is almost always out of that conversation. And after watching it again, I think it can stand toe-to-toe with some of his other movies. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the forgotten ones. I mean, because people who have watched it generally like it well enough. And I think one reason it also doesn't get nearly as much attention is I think it's by far his most straightforward film. Because all his other films have, I'm not going to say a gimmick, but a really interesting concept. You got Memento has the memory loss. Batman has Batman.
Yeah.
And Prestige, you got magicians or dreams and space. And this one is just, on the surface, seems like a run-of-the-mill detective thriller. Kind of a procedural. And so I guess it doesn't grab your attention nearly as much as the other ones would, just on the surface.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't have that hook that he kind of gets you with. But I'm okay with him. You know, I mean, I get excited every time he announces a new movie because I wonder what he's going to do this time. He's my favorite director currently. So, I mean, whenever the Dunkirk trailer just came out,
yeah,
that little minute ended up getting me incredibly excited.
Yeah, the one shot on the pier where it's a long take, and then one soldier looks up and they all kind of duck down real fast. It's a really incredible shot.
That whole trailer was full of just really cool, like very simple, but really cool shots. And then, I mean, with it only being like a slightly over a minute long, like that was a trailer that had tension in it. I'm excited to see the movie.
Yeah. Besides that final shot, the trailer didn't do a lot for me, but just the name Nolan, yeah, I'm in. So,
yeah,
he's definitely in my top five directors as well.
But back to Insomnia, I remember I ended up watching it a few years ago. It was whenever I pretty much realized that after watching the Batman movies and then Inception and The Prestige, Christopher Nolan became my favorite director. And so I wanted to go back and watch all of his movies. So I went back and I watched Memento, and then I went back and I watched Insomnia, and I loved both of them. And then I could, you know, start being a part of the conversation anytime Christopher Nolan came up. And that is when I noticed, I was like, man, nobody really likes talking about Insomnia. So, you know, I figured of all movies that I think are underrated, I think this is definitely one of them. So what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's kind of the same for me. Back when I was first really getting into film and learning about directors and their filmography, I just kind of looked back through his filmography and saw this one. And so I went and checked it out, and it's been a few years. This is only the second time I've seen it, but I remember really liking it the first time, thinking it was just a really well-crafted film, and I really appreciated Robbins and Al Pacino. I thought they were both great. And, yeah, on second rewatch, I basically liked everything I liked before and even came up with a few new things that I really appreciated. I think it's like a perfectly crafted film. I really have no complaints as far as just direction, editing, pacing, acting. Everything is really tightly put together. One thing that really intrigued me this time was the blood motif he uses. It was kind of like the black and white phone call from Memento.
Yeah.
Where every time there's a break, it comes back to this blood. And I'm going to give a spoiler warning for the rest of the film. Just if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's a really, really good thriller. And it's directed by Nolan, so you knew that. But yeah, I'm going to spoil things from now on. At first you think it's, what's his name, Robin Williams, like getting the blood off his clothes. But then you learn it's actually kind of Al Pacino's guilt haunting him from earlier, crime he committed earlier on in the film.
Yeah, there were so many little things, that being one of them, that just really, to me, set this movie apart. Like, the way he was, like, you don't even know, like you said, you're not even sure what that's meaning until you end up getting further in the movie, and yet it's still effective.
Yeah, it really sets an atmosphere and tone. Well, I thought another thing I found pretty cool was how nonchalantly the introduction of the never-ending daylight is. Because it's like 20 minutes into the film, they've already gone and done like a full day's worth of investigation, and all of a sudden they say they want to go visit someone, like, and they say, hey, you know it's like 10 p.m. And you're like, oh. And the realization of the setting and the kind of the gimmick of the film all of a sudden sets in. It's really well done, I think.
Yeah. It almost started like you're pretty much told it as a joke, like, oh, it's 10. Oh, okay, yeah, I know. No, 10 p.m. And you're like, oh, yeah, this is Alaska. But then the fact that, you know, it doesn't get dark ends up playing such a huge role in the movie.
Yeah. His exhaustion kind of matches how his own personal life and professional life is kind of collapsing around him as he's trying to sleep, but he can't. It's a really, really cool concept, I think.
Yeah, I know a lot of movies have handled that before, of like where the director tries to get the viewer into the same headspace as the character. And it's worked a couple times before, but to me, Christopher Nolan does it so effectively in this, where as Al Pacino's character, Will Dormer, like gets more and more tired and just exhaustion is setting in, like, at some points, I almost felt exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, just with the clicking, like, the accentuating certain noises but not others, and, like, his quick edits just kind of flashes across the screen,
mm-hmm.
just making you feel like you're tired watching the movie. It was very well done.
Yeah, and the portrayal of when he was at the end of the film, actually, when he's driving out and he's almost falling asleep, that was actually pretty much exactly how it does feel. It's happened to me a few times where I really shouldn't have been driving, but I was. And that he portrays it in a way that feels very true to reality of how it feels to be driving when you're very tired.
Yeah. There were so many scenes. That was definitely one that that stood out. And he thinks he's having to dodge the truck, and turns out he had just nearly fallen asleep, and that was probably, you know, or that was just like a figment of his imagination that he had seen. And you really, and that, like that, like you said, that's towards the end of the film. That's towards the climax, and which itself to me is a very satisfying climax.
Yeah.
Everything. In that, are all the ways they handled that, I think, were really cool, really different.
All right. So, what are some of your overall positives with this film?
One of the main things is just technically speaking. I think you kind of said it earlier, but it's just in terms of craft, it's just such a well-made movie. From its editing, mm-hmm. and its directing and its writing, it feels like something that you would show at film school to say, like, just in terms of technical achievement, pacing, everything about it, like, it just feels quality.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts off as kind of your average slow burn procedural. And then near the end of the first act, you get the monkey wrench thrown in of where he accidentally shoots his partner in that fantastic fog sequence. I mean, let's just talk about that. That was an incredible sequence. Go ahead.
Every time I watch that, I've seen it several times now, I always find myself rooting for them to get him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always like, oh, they're about to get him. I get excited as they're about to lay the trap, and then the megaphone goes off, and it's like, oh, that one thing messed it all up. But I don't know, it's so tense, and it's so well done.
Yeah, that's the mark of a really well-crafted film, is where you can every time be completely sucked into the moment. Yeah, that chase scene is just brilliant with how well it portrays being completely lost and confused without being able to see.
Yeah, I remember one of our first saw it, and he shoots him. I thought, wow, I didn't think they were gonna have it, you know, happen like this, where he gets him and then he turns him over and it's his partner, and I'm like, oh wow,
yeah,
you know, this movie just got very different.
Yeah, speaking of his partner, one thing I like about this film is how all the side characters feel very real and human. Because they set up, before they kill off his partner, they set up a whole subplot involving him, with how some past corruption is catching up with him and he wants to testify and kind of get a plea bargain. But Pacino doesn't want him to, because that also might bleed over into some of his cases. And so there's this tension between them, which leads to doubts of whether Pacino may or may not have intentionally shot him. And I really like how they don't just have characters there for the sake of having characters. They actually, each character is well thought out, and they feel like real people with real lives.
Yeah, like the first scene where he comes in and he meets the, I guess it's the chief of police there, and you know, they clearly have a history, and then you're able to see the way that the local police station there operates, and everybody clearly knows each other. And then the lady at the restaurant that they go to, I definitely agree with what you're saying, that the whole town just feels like it has a sense of history, like you said. And these were actual, like, not characters that they just kind of threw in, but like, oh well, you know, this is this person, this is what they would do, and this is this person. I don't know, it seemed like they had a really good natural dynamic.
Yeah, the innkeeper was a character that really didn't need to be explained at all, but she was fleshed out into a real interesting person. I guess we got to mention now, Robin Williams and Al Pacino, man.
This is really the reason that I love this movie, is these two actors.
Seriously. First, going to Pacino, it's a very subtle performance. I mean, he's often really big in how he acts. But in this one, he's very laid back. And even before he gets there, his character feels tired, like he's seen a lot in life, and he's kind of cynical. But you also can tell that he cares about his job and he really wants to catch this murderer. He seems to empathize a lot with the victims and feel the anger and rage at them being murdered. And you understand what drives him as a character to go to these lengths to solve these crimes. And he's a brilliant detective, but not in like a ridiculous, unrealistic way. It's in a very subtle way that feels real. He doesn't just walk on a scene of a crime and be able to tell everything, but he does have this intuition that sets him above the others, but not in a way that makes him into a superhero.
Yeah, he's not like Sherlock Holmes where he walks into a crime scene and he's like, I can tell by, how many wrinkles are in your eye, you've recently done this. But it does,
yeah.
Like you said, his, a lot of, he'll be able to tell certain aspects about someone. He'll be able to find what makes him tick. His idea of, filling the backpack and leaving it back and then making a call to the station saying, we're looking for the backpack. Like,
yeah,
he was, like you said, a really good detective, but not in a kind of an over-the-top way. It was a very believable way. A lot of his interactions with Hilary Swank's character where, he would be giving her advice and be like, oh, well, as a detective, all things like, you should be looking out for these kind of things. It all felt very natural, I mean, I've never, watched police work, but, just from the outsider's view, it seems like this is, what I can assume to be somewhat accurate of someone who's just really good at their job.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting how he takes Hilary Swank under his wing. He's trying to protect her from, like, some of the mistakes he made and the compromises he's done in the past. He's trying to keep her pure in a way. Yeah, I always thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I really like their dynamic. Hilary Swank, like, even though, I do think, like, the two standouts of this movie are definitely Pacino and Williams, but Hilary Swank was really good in it, like, as this kind of young, up-and-coming detective who really looks up to him, and I really like their dynamic.
Yeah,
like,
she really holds her own in their scenes.
Yeah, and, I mean, they both have really good lines. They've got really good back and forth. And it helps, when you get to the finale and she's ready to do what he did. She's got the bullet, the evidence that she's ready to throw away. And then he's got to stop her and say, no, you got to stay on the path or whatever he says.
Yeah. Don't go there kind of thing. Don't start down that road. And then, man, Robin Williams, I mean, I haven't seen all of his filmography, but this would not surprise me if this is his best role. Is the character he has is so subtle and it's so much against type. He usually plays comedic roles. And this one, he's a bit of he would be a sociopath, but he also feels very human. And while he's very smart, he also makes dumb mistakes and he has the kind of the basic human needs of companionship and connection like everyone else. And then it moves into this kind of bizarre relationship that he has throughout the film with Al Pacino, to where they're both trying to screw the other one over and are looking for ways to get the upper hand, but he also wants to kind of have a relationship with him because I guess he's just lonely. But you see, he's bragging to him about how he committed the crime, and he's also kind of laying out his fears and whatnot and trying to justify himself for the awful murder he committed. He doesn't want to be viewed as some psychopath, but all the while he's also playing the detective and trying to frame him and whatnot for other stuff. It's really crazy how the entire dynamic is written and then played by the two actors.
Yeah. I think the highlights of this movie are definitely their interactions. The first phone call is so well done because you don't see it coming.
Yeah.
And so I remember watching it and getting chills when he hung up. I was like, wow, this is not Robin Williams like I've seen him before. I actually have a quote here from Christopher Nolan about Robin Williams. I'm just going to read it real quick. It said, what I thought of Robin was he is an extraordinary guy to work with and he gave what I consider to be a flawless performance. I wound up watching the film hundreds of times as we cut it, and I never hit that point when the performance where you start to see the acting. Most performances at a point, bits start to peel off and away, But with Robbins, he was very much in that character. Not that he's a very dark person to work with. He's very lively and friendly and assuming to work with, and amusing to work with. But he really found something within himself. I think it's a very underrated bit of work on his part.
Definitely, I believe it. His character is so complex, and it comes off perfectly.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I'm sure I haven't seen it half as many times as Nolan did in editing it, but I definitely see what he's saying, where, you know, it doesn't look like a performance. It's just... I mean, and it's probably because, you know, I've seen a Robin Williams performance before. I've seen so many of his movies, and it's like, this is a different... Like, I mean, I'm looking, and I'm seeing Robin Williams on the screen because I know his face, but it's like...
Yeah.
This character... There's nothing about any of his quirks that I feel like have come up before. He's just this, like you said, the sociopath. He plays it so well and so believable. And, like, especially at least, like, early on, fairly, you know... sympathetically almost, where especially as he's saying, you know, like, I didn't murder her any more than you murdered your partner, I don't want to be remembered like this. You at first be like, oh man, you know, maybe this is just a misunderstanding, but, you know, obviously as it goes on, you realize it's a lot darker than that, especially as he seems ready to kill Hilary Swank's character. He is like, no, this guy is just kind of messed up. But
yeah, he's going to do whatever it takes to get away, but he always justifies it to himself and then tries, when he does form that connection with Pacino, he doesn't want Pacino to think of him badly either. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, he even says it whenever they finally meet face to face, which to me might be my favorite scene in the movie. The
fairy?
When they find the fairy scene, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so, so well done. Seeing both of these characters in somewhat similar situations talking to each other, like, and it, you know, obviously made all the better by these two just amazing performances.
And then with that amazing scene, the wrap-up where he brings out the wild card of the tape recorder, the scene just builds and builds, and then it explodes. It's crazy for just two old guys talking to each other.
Yeah, and that's what I can't help but think about this movie, is like, this is a movie about two kind of older people, and we have two different chase scenes in it, and both are incredibly well done.
Yeah.
I never feel like, I don't know, it seems a lot of the times when a movie stars, you know, kind of an actor who's gotten older, like, they almost play his age as like a gimmick, you know?
Uh-huh.
But that wasn't the case in this one. It's like, no, these are two characters. This is a good story. We're not going to, like, you know, use this as a gimmick. It was, I don't know, it was very entertaining to watch. And there were just some specific scenes where it's like, if you put any other actors in the shoes of these characters, and I don't think it would have worked so well.
Yeah, they played off each other very well. Yeah, and Pacino is also a very fascinating character. Because as we learn later on in the film, he framed up possibly guilty man. We don't actually know if the man was actually guilty, but he framed a person he believed to be a child molester. And so we realize that he's willing to do whatever it takes to put people he believes are guilty behind bars. And so at the outset of the film, we're told there's an investigation pending, and he's worried that if his reputation is tarnished, it'll mess up all his previous convictions. And so that's why when he accidentally shoots his partner, he tries to frame Williams for it, because he doesn't want all his convictions overturned from a scandal. And so that's what really, that's like the first curveball the film throws at you, is he while he's trying to solve one murder, he's trying to cover up another one. And so you see this, how him as a person and also the case is just slowly unraveling.
Mm-hmm.
Where Swank is also, Hilary Swank, she's a very smart character as well. And she idolizes Dormer, but she's also seeing some of the holes in his story. And then also Williams is contacting Pacino and trying to blackmail him, to the point where he definitely wants to pin Pacino, but he's also afraid to damage his reputation. So they're kind of, while he's supposedly solving the case, they're plotting to get to absolve Pacino of his partner's death, and all the while he's sneaking into his apartment trying to frame him too.
Yeah, it was like the dynamic he had with that, where, you know, he knows that Williams did it, and he does want to see justice done, but like you said, he's afraid of what could happen. Like, there's really almost no way for him to, like, for both ways to happen. And it seems like he was pretty much okay with letting her boyfriend.
I don't know. Was he though? Because he tried to beat the cops there and try to find the gun.
Yeah.
So what was he trying to do that just to have one more wild card to play off on Williams, or was he trying to avoid framing the teenager?
To me, it's not really made super clear. And I think maybe both are true. I know it would seem within character for him to want to have that extra thing, just to always have the upper hand in case there is a way to be able to pin it, you know. Well, and I think even Robin Williams kind of says it, you know. He said, with the gun and the dress, you know, you could have definitely pinned it on me, and who would have believed anything I had to say against you when they had evidence like that. So whenever I say that it seemed like he was okay with that, I'm meaning more towards the end, when it's pretty much wrapping up. You know, they framed the kid for it pretty much, and Al Pacino is seemingly ready to board his plane, and the only reason that he goes back is because he sees the letters there, and so he realizes that that Williams has no intention of giving the letters to Swank, and is more than most likely going to end up killing her. So it seems like that's what sends him back.
Okay, that was one thing I was going to mention in my dislikes. When he's seemingly about to board the plane, then he goes and instead goes to Williams' house. That was because he saw the letters, you said? I must have missed that.
Williams had told Hillary Swank's character that he had letters from I'm forgetting the girl who got murdered. But he had letters from her that would have proved, or at least helped solidify, the case against her boyfriend being the killer.
The abuse and all that?
Just kind of showing, like, where she would write to him saying, you know, he hit me and he did all this. And so William said, if that would help strengthen the case, you can come by and get it. And so whenever Al Pacino's character saw that the letters were actually at his house, at his apartment and not at his lake house, he realized that that Robin Williams had no intention. He wasn't calling Hillary Swank's character out there to get letters, because if he was, then they wouldn't have been at his apartment. He was calling her out to a secluded area to kill her.
Okay, but why was he at the apartment though? The way I eventually interpreted it was he was about to leave, then he just decided, the hell with it, I'm gonna go take this guy down. Because that's how I thought of it, but it wasn't clearly explained.
Because I was a little bit confused as well, and so I have this thing where, like, if I don't understand a movie, I'll end up pausing it and, like, read its summary on Wikipedia to see what they say about it.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I thought happened, and I ended up looking it up, and at least that's what the summary on there says, that when he goes back to the place and he sees, I think the sentence on the entry in Wikipedia just says that when he sees that the letters are at the apartment and not the lake house, Will Dormer realizes that that Robin Williams has only invited Hillary Swank out to his lakeside cabin to kill her.
Okay. But that doesn't explain why he's at the apartment in the first place. I don't know. I mean, it's a very minor nitpick.
Yeah. I wish I could just ask Nolan.
Yeah, I'm sure he has a very clear reason.
Is there anything else that you really liked about the movie?
One more thing I wanted to mention about Williams is how, this is all, both him and the writing, how he kind of goes into this nervous rambling whenever he's talking to Dormer. It feels very realistic of anyone who is uncomfortable, and like when he's trying to justify himself and explain the situation, also while maintaining control, he's kind of has this really nervous rambling he'll go into, and I really like that touch. It felt very real to life.
Yeah, it was very natural. It didn't feel like, you know, he was reading it off of a script. I always like that whenever actors kind of, you know, they have their characters almost like just misspeak, like not even really to advance the plot. It's not like, oh, that was a tell, you know, like this guy always mumbled. It was just, no, like this is just, like you said, kind of a little touch to make him feel more human. It's not really, it's nothing major. It doesn't do anything for the plot, really. It's just another way Robin Williams made this character that much more believable.
Yeah. And one thing, I don't want to get too deep into the politics, but one thing that struck me is how this film seemed rather timely now with the whole police violence and police corruption, with all that's happening in the news. It seemed rather interesting and timely, considering it was made 13 years ago or 14 years ago.
Yeah. I always like it whenever movies kind of, they don't necessarily try to feel like they're really sending a message necessarily, or at least saying, you know, like, this is right, this is wrong. I mean, although, you know, obviously they're not justifying, like, corruption, but, you know, the idea of, you know, in this instance, does the ends justify the means? You know, how far can it go? It brought up some really, I mean, I think, important issues, and like you said, very timely for now. So, I mean, I thought it did it in a really well-done way. It almost reminded me of the movie Gone Baby Gone, where when the movie ends, you're like, you know, what is right?
I haven't seen that one yet.
I understand where they're coming. Oh, well, okay.
As long as you're not spoiling, yeah.
Okay, I won't spoil it. You should definitely watch it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good stuff about. I actually haven't seen any of Affleck's directorial projects. I really should.
I think he's just done three of them so far, but all three, I think Gone Baby Gone is my favorite, and the Town is my least favorite of the three, and I still love it. So
okay,
he's done really well.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting how, as the film goes on, as he gets more and more exhausted, and as his world like is slowly crumbling around him, where he has to talk to somebody, so he eventually confesses a past crime to his landlady, and I thought which is a really, really kind of poignant scene, where he talks about how he had framed the child molester, or possible child molester, and the way it's handled is, the film isn't exactly heavy-handedly laying down guilt on him, it's just like kind of saying it as fact, and we feel and understand his perspective of how his job, his life has been to protect the public from these people, and he honestly believed this man was guilty, and he was about to see him walk, so he went and planted evidence. And the film doesn't really, it allows the audience to pass judgment on that. And I think in the end, it doesn't try to justify his actions, and as he's dying, and Hilary Swank's character has the opportunity to cover up one of his crimes, he won't let her, because he realizes it's not worth it. There's too much guilt and angst and just all of that comes, it takes a price, it takes a toll on the person in order to keep those secrets and to live with that. And it's just not worth it, and he won't allow this young, pure person to sully themselves like that. I found it really interesting.
Yeah, it was that, like you said, it wasn't like super heavy-handed, it wasn't beating you over, but it was, you know, I do like that scene where he ends up, you know, keeping her from doing that, like, making sure that she doesn't end up living with the same kind of guilt and regret that he does. And with the case, I think the movie kind of all but says that, you know, Dobbs, the guy he planted evidence on, I'm fairly certain, like, it was him, because it seems like the whole point was, I knew, and everyone knew it was him. Yeah, the reason that I'm more inclined to believe that he was is just, to me, if he is, then that kind of helps the theme of, does the ends justify the means? You know, the ends being a guilty man is a way, the means being you went outside of our justice system to get it done.
Yeah, the language of the film would suggest that he was guilty, but we don't know because it happened beforehand.
Yeah, and then whenever he does confess this crime to the innkeeper, I mean, she's essentially the audience right there, where it's, you know, it's like, she's not necessarily being like, hey, I'm judging you. I can't believe you would do this.
Yeah.
You know, she seems understanding, like you said, it wasn't this...
Yeah.
It wasn't this, you know, how can I get ahead if I can get a certain amount of arrest? It was because he believed it to be the right thing to do. And because of that, because, you know, towards the end when he says, you know, I don't know if I meant to shoot him or not, you know, obviously we know it was an accident, and you can't help but feel sympathetic towards him, you know? Like, you understand why he planted the evidence. You understand, and I mean, obviously, some of the reasons why he covered up the murder of his partner was because, you know, like, he didn't mean to, and why should he, you know, go down? Because obviously that's what they would think. But also, you know, like, if they found that out, like you said, everything he did, all of his arrests and stuff, it all is gonna be looked at, you know, a lot, are under a lot more scrutiny, and people that he knows to be criminals have the potential to be released. And so he's balancing all of these things and trying to think about what's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about Dormer's corruption, is where it's not for personal gain. He's doing what he believes to be the right thing. He's trying to avenge crimes, essentially. And so it's a lot more subtle than just a selfish guy trying to get ahead in life or something. Yeah, and like, what does it matter that the public knows that who shot his partner? His partner's dead. So it plays it very, very well, I think. One last positive is just how well this film portrays just exhaustion. You feel tired as the film progresses, and Dormer's going without sleep. You feel like you've been a week without sleep the farther it goes. And that's just a testament to really great direction and editing.
Yeah. I mean, I know we talked about it a little bit before, where this was kind of one of his movies that doesn't really have that kind of hook. But, I mean, if you were to argue that it does, I think this would be it. That it's, you know, the quick edits, the cuts, like when he's trying to go to sleep, and it's just like a series of cuts of him in different positions, and then like flashbacks, and then just quick shots of the sun, and then the blood, like just everything going back. It's done in a way that portrays exhaustion in a way that hasn't really been done before. Yeah. And so, like, it isn't as crazy as, you know, being unable to create new memories like Memento, but it is, like, I think it is enough to me to where it separates this from other thrillers. Because I think with the material, it's a cool story, but I think the potential for this to be just, you know, another, you know, decent thriller was there. And so it takes a really good director to tell this story, to this really good story, in a way to where it's, you know, this isn't just a, you know, a decent thriller. This is a really well done movie from start to finish, just in terms of cinematography, pacing, editing, acting, everything about this movie. Every department just seems like it went above and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we go into our dislikes, is there any other positives you want to mention?
Not really that I think that we haven't touched on. Like I said, I think one of the biggest reasons that this movie is such a favorite of mine is just the acting. The acting and the quality of film. But I think we probably talked about most of the why I think it's one of his better movies.
Yeah. Okay. Do you actually have any dislikes?
There was that one scene that you brought up where I did have to pause it, and I ended up looking up, you know, what was happening. So I feel like, I mean, if I had to, I guess we both choose the same thing, and like maybe explain why he went back a little bit more. I feel like I understand the reasons as to why he went back to the lake house when he saw the letters, but we really don't know why he went back to the apartment.
Yeah.
And maybe there is a reason there. Actually, I mean, I'm sure there is, with it being Nolan. It just maybe could have been portrayed a little bit better.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's my only gripe as well. And the thing is, that's a testament to how well-crafted this film is, because any other thriller would have like 10 elements like that. But this one is so well crafted. The only dislikes we have is a very minor nitpick.
Yeah, and I don't even want, like, whenever I was thinking, because, you know, I knew we were going to end up talking about maybe some of the negatives, and I was really trying to think of, you know, just think of something. But
yeah,
I mean, like you said, maybe I know one thing that Nolan gets criticized sometimes for is for humor. There were a couple of jokes maybe
lack
that didn't
lack
land.
Of humor, you mean? Or?
Yeah, kind of having a lack of humor, and then when it does, some of his dialogue especially when it's trying to be more humorous, maybe doesn't land as well. So, I mean, there's probably a couple jokes in here or lines of dialogue that was played for laughs that maybe didn't work, for me at least. But, I mean, like I said, it's such a small nitpick.
Okay. All right. Is there any final thoughts on the film?
I would just say to anybody who hasn't seen this, you should really go out and rent it or buy it or whatever if you have it and you've been meaning to get it. It's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's basically a perfect film, I think. Every element is completely on point. Nolan is a really fantastic director. And the performances alone would make it worth seeing, even if it wasn't a perfect film. But being a perfect film with these two phenomenal performances, it makes me kind of sad that it is as forgotten as it is, because it's never really mentioned on any list of Nolan films. No one ever mentions Insomnia, and that's a shame.
Yeah, and I know that something that gets brought up a lot when talking about Al Pacino, I hear often, you know, like, Al Pacino needs another great role where, I mean, like you said, he's usually like kind of very larger than life kind of character in a lot of his films. I think he still has a few, you know, he's had some pretty good performances lately. I do get, you know, a lot of people accuse him of, you know, chewing scenery sometimes in his roles, but with this, you know, whenever they say, you know, like, we need another good subtle Pacino role, it's like, well, have you not seen Insomnia? Because
chances are not.
Yeah, to me, this is one of Pacino's best roles. He's definitely so good in it. Like, there's no, when he's likable when he needs to be likable, he's sympathetic when he needs to be sympathetic. So, you know, I really wish that this movie would get mentioned in a much more popular movie, and a lot of people would be like, maybe I need to see that, because it deserves the attention. Like you said, it's a near perfect film.
Yeah. Where would you rank this in Nolan's overall filmography?
I have a hard time ranking Nolan's movies, to be completely honest, because, I mean, he's made a few that I honestly feel comfortable in calling, like, a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And so it's almost just more of kind of what mood I'm in, because I'm in love with so many of his movies. I would definitely put it probably in the top half, though. If I had to list from like 1 to however many, 10, however many it is. But I probably, a week later, I may even change the list. I couldn't put anything in stone, but
yeah, I think I would put Inception and probably Batman Begins and Memento above it. But Insomnia, I think, fits pretty well anywhere below that. And there are some pretty fantastic films below those, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea that it's one of his weaker movies, I do disagree with. I think it can go, you know, like, I mean, I definitely see the arguments as to why maybe it didn't achieve things that Memento and Inception achieved. But just, I think if you're comparing, like, it's subjective, you know. I think if you're comparing the objective quality, it is, you know, you could make the argument that, given that we're really having to go to nitpicks to criticize it, if we're just looking at the movie technically, you know, it is one of his best, I think.
Yeah, I think from a purely film craft perspective, not dealing with the concept, I would say it's stronger than about half of his films. Like, as good as Dark Knight is, that has some pretty serious flaws. Interstellar and Dark Knight Rises, I like them both, but they're not perfect. Yeah, so suffice to say, I'm really excited to see where Nolan goes from here. I'm looking forward to Dunkirk. I don't know exactly what to expect, but with a talent like this, I really, really want to see it, and I hope it's good.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to get some attention just because of the very interesting cast, with him casting Harry Styles in a World War II movie.
Yeah, that's a very interesting choice. But then he did cast Heath Ledger as the Joker. Come on.
Yeah. So, you know what? I'm not going to try to start judging beforehand. I'm going to assume that he saw something amazing in the audition tape. So
he has a history of really interesting casting choices, like Catwoman, Anne Hathaway. Was that before or after Les Mis?
I'm not sure if that was before or after.
Because it would have been right around the same time. Because before that, she was known as a kind of a comedy actress, and a lot of people were really worried when he cast her as Catwoman, and she knocked it out of the park. And yeah, and same with Heath Ledger. Hell, he was kind of a pretty boy actor before that, and he blew everyone away with how good his Joker was. And so if he casts a Jonas brother, who knows? It might be good. Yeah. It probably will be good.
Yeah. I mean, he put one of the best comedian actors ever as the role of someone who killed a high school girl in insomnia, and yeah. It ended up being one of his best performances. So I'll reserve all of my judgment. In fact, I mean, because you wouldn't think so, I'm assuming that it's going to be amazing, because there had to be some reason that he would cast him. So.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Not a whole lot. Just thanks for, enjoying the first episode and checking out our second one. Hope you keep tuning
know.
In.
I don't know why anyone would go to a second episode after listening to the first one, but hey. Well, thanks for listening. And next week we will be reviewing Jack Reacher, which that was my pick. I really, really love that film and look forward to talking about it. If you want to get in contact with us, I am on Facebook as Gabriel Green. We also have a Facebook page. It's Underrated Podcast. Our website is underratedpodcast.com. And if you want to interact with us, you can leave a comment on the website or maybe a suggestion for a film you'd like us to review. And if you want to talk about either Jack Reacher or Insomnia, you can leave a comment and we'll read it on next episode.
Another way you could contact us is you can email us at theunderratedpodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at underrated_pod. So we hope you enjoyed our second episode. And we look forward to talking again next week. See you then.
See ya.
I made a mistake. You can still use me. Just tell me how
to survive. Don't say fix it, because you can't. We covered up the one mess. You made another.
All right, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry. Just tell me what I have to do.
I was in prison in Siberia. I spent my first winter wearing a dead man's coat. A hole in one pocket. I chewed these fingers off before the frostbite could turn to gangrene. These I gave up to avoid working in the sulfur mine. That is how I survived when so many others did not. A man this rare can always be of use. So show me. Show me you are rare. Show me you'll do anything to survive.
I don't understand.
The fingers from your left hand.
You got a knife?
Did I have a knife in Siberia?